You got this. Please accept my recording.
I did accept your recording.
Thank you. From my background, can you tell the who I am covering in my conspiracy theory this month? Do you need me to move?
Yeah. No, but I know, like, I feel like I know who this is, but I can't, like, name them, and it's bothering me.
Yay, good. We are going to cover, or I'm going to cover in my conspiracy theory this month in July, Ed and Lorraine Warren.
Ah, it's an old timey picture. It's why I'm like, ooh.
Yeah.
I'm like, who I know his that? Faces. Yeah, it is driving me crazy.
I know. And I can't quite figure out like how to like position myself so that you can see fully who it is.
If you keep spinning around your office chair, that's great. Yeah. Good, good, good.
I have a very tiny area that I can move around in. So, yeah. So I'm covering Ed and Lorraine Warren in my July conspiracy theory. And it's a conspiracy simply because they're very controversial, right?
They
we have covered,
sure.
Yeah, for sure. We have covered a number of locations and hauntings that they have been a part of in this podcast. And some of it is kind of up for interpretation. Some of it is, legit.
They're kind of giants in the paranormal community. I mean, they really started to put it on the map in a real way.
In a very, very, very real way. Yeah. So let's talk about the life and career of Ed and Lorraine Warren. I got my information from Courant.com, TonySpira.com, Cosmopolitan.com. Also, I did find out if you want to do your own at-home bikini wax with leftover Christmas candles, hit me up. I can give you that article too. Because Cosmo's good for that. And then, yes. And then also the Shock Doc. Did you see this?
But now I'm stuck on the candle thing. I'm like, you know, your punani is going to smell like pine tree, but also go on. Okay.
Not mine. Mine's going to smell like cinnamon. That's Christmas. Those are my Christmas
right.
candles. Pumpkin spice. And then also the Shock Doc is a new, fairly new release documentary on the true story of Ed and Lorraine Warren. So,
interesting.
So from TonySpira.com, which links you to the Psychic Research Foundation that Ed and Lorraine Warren founded, Tony Spira is their son-in-law. So from TonySpira.com, he says, the Warrens dedicated their lives to investigating the supernatural to help bring an understanding of the other side to the forefront while helping bring peace to the families affected. The work that they performed and the events that they have encountered is nothing short of remarkable. The cases they have documented, along with the relics and artifacts they have collected, are considered to be the most powerful connections between the human world and the spirit world. Ed Warren was a demonologist. Lorraine Warren was a trance medium. They were not occultists. They were not strange. If you had the privilege of speaking to them, they would seem like normal folks with regular jobs. They were ordinary people who happened to do extraordinary work in a field that most people fear or don't believe. The forces they confronted are religious entities that, by their own admission, exist for the sheer purpose of opposing the works of God. Diabolical forces are formidable. These forces are eternal and they exist today. In a world that scoffs at ghosts and laughs at the unusual, the Warrens deliver a contrary message, and that message is this. The fairy tale is true. The devil exists. God exists. And for us as people, our very destiny hinges upon which one we elect to follow.
Nice.
Yeah. And I completely agree. I, obviously being fascinated with the paranormal for most of my adult life, I am very, very familiar with Ed and Lorraine Warren. Amityville Horror was probably one of the very first cases they were involved with that caught my attention. And I think most of the attention of our generation, Yeah. So it's they over their 50-year career, they've actually investigated thousands of cases of paranormal claims and phenomena. So they were devout Catholics. They were famed paranormal investigators and what some might call the reigning king and queen of hauntings, both in Connecticut and in Hollywood. They will be featured in the latest film about their exploits, The Conjuring 3, The Devil Made Me Do It, which opened Friday, which is a week ago, this last Friday. Mm-hmm. Have you seen that yet? Or just like the first
couple? No, I told you, like, yeah, I got into a couple minutes and I was like, this is not the jam for the mood mm-mm. that I'm in right now. So,
yeah, no, it took me 3 days to get through the entire movie because right, I was kind of exactly. like, yeah, you really need to be in a headspace for these kinds of movies.
No, for sure. I finally had some time, you know, it's a small kid, you know, and right. it's hard to find the time to like get into those movies. Obviously he can't be around at all mm-hmm. for that. So mm-hmm. I finally got a couple minutes and I started, I was like, no, not right now.
Yeah.
I can't, I'm not there. You're right. You have to be ready really for it, do. You know, like get in the mood.
Yeah, for sure. It took me about 3 days to get through the movie, not because it was boring, but like you said, you've got to be in the right mood for it. Mm-hmm. So it's a really good movie. I really like it. The case is really fascinating. It is based, as all of them are, on a real family, a real story. Obviously, mm-hmm. Hollywood kind of takes liberties and makes it way more sensationalized, but
of course,
I like it. I recommend it. Nice. The Conjuring universe is one of my favorite, right up there with Marvel. Which when I was doing my research, I actually found that the Conjuring universe is kind of like critically and financially, literally right up there with Marvel.
Wow, really?
Yes, they have so That's many shocking. Spinoffs. So there's all the Conjuring movies, then there's Annabelle plus all of her spinoffs. There's The mm-hmm. Nun. They're doing The Crooked Man is another one. Mm-hmm. There's a ton. Yeah, so it's an actual like universe that's just right up there financially and critically with Marvel, which I thought was really interesting.
That is interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, so from an apartment in Hartford, Connecticut, where the real Annabelle lived, to a crime scene in Brookville that inspired The Devil Made Me Do It, to the haunting in Connecticut in Southington, the Warrens, who are both now deceased, told tales that later were turned into movies, which collectively have grossed more than $1 billion.
Wow.
For a horror franchise. That's almost unheard of.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Like Freddy, Jason, Michael Myers, none of them mm-hmm. did that. This couple and their cases and these real life cases that these movies are based on did that, which I think is absolutely fabulous. So Ed Warren identified himself as a demonologist and Lorraine Warren declared herself a clairvoyant and a trance medium. I'm going to go into what that is specifically in just a second. They investigated alleged hauntings and wrote books, gave lectures on paranormalism, but I kind of want to get a little bit into who they really were, who these people were and what the basis for their beliefs and stories told, like what were they? Mm-hmm. So they were actually both born in Bridgeport, Connecticut, him in 1926, she a few months later in 1927. Their son-in-law, Tony Spera, said in a phone interview that Ed grew up in a house that he believed was haunted. From the ages of 5 to 12, Ed would hear knocking sounds, footsteps, shadows, names called out, and an old woman. What is with the old women ghosts? We cover a lot of shit where there's like an old woman. Why? Don't let me become this old woman. Well, yeah, but don't let me become this creepy old woman when I die, okay? Laura, that's your job.
And stop you now, stop you then.
Fuck off, stop me now. Laura's fired.
You got to be more specific.
I hate you. So young Ed was terrified. His father said to him, there is a logical reason for everything that happens in this house. So essentially his father was aware that there was something strange going on in the house, but he never gave him a logical reason, just said, there's a logical reason for everything that's going on in this house.
Of course.
Sure. Why not? So Ed met Lorraine in 1944. So Lorraine, she noticed her clairvoyant abilities at a young age as well, around the age of 9. She remembered seeing auras around people, but assumed this was normal. And a lot of healers, a lot of empaths, a lot of people, certainly me, a lot of folks that I know, they do see light around people. And some of the more stronger empaths, clairvoyants, mediums can see the auras in like a rainbow color, kind of like in correlation with the chakras. Mm-hmm. I see lights. I see beams of light coming out of the top of their head, and they're either very bright or they're very dim, but they're just sort of, yes, like,
yeah.
That's what I see in people. I see lights that are coming out from the top of their head. I don't know why that is. I don't see it encased around their body. But to me, the lights are either there or they're not there. And if they're there, they're varying shades of brightness or dimness. So she remembers seeing auras around people, but assumed that it was normal. When she was a child, she was going to an all-girls Catholic school. And she remembers planting a tree for Arbor Day. And mm-hmm. when she did, she looked up in the sky and she could see the tree fully grown, its branches everywhere, its leaves. And she was looking at it and kind of marveling at it when one of the nuns came up to her and they asked what she was looking at. And she was like, "I'm looking at the tree." And she was like, "Can you see the future?" And Lorraine said, "I guess maybe I can." Another instance where she realized that she was a little different was she was talking to her friends and they were outside. I don't know if it was recess or I don't know what they had in the fucking 40s. But
right.
They were outside at this Catholic school and she was telling her friends, "Look at the lights around Mother Superior. They're not as bright as the lights that are around Sister Joseph." And the girls were like, "I don't know what you're talking about. I don't see lights. Like, wow. I don't." Yeah. But Mother Superior heard this and she took Lorraine aside and she was like, "We don't talk about those kinds of things at the school." So that's when Lorraine sort of realized there was something different about her and that it wasn't great, or at least outwardly to everybody that like she was sharing it with, it wasn't great. So as she got older, at the time, Lorraine showed little interest in boys. She stated in her later years that, quote, "I didn't have any interest in boys. I was concentrating on my schoolwork. And besides, boys were rough, not genteel like my brother Jim. Boys were too rough around the edges for me." But her friends they went out to a movie when she was 16, and they decided to introduce her to this usher at the movie theater. His name was Ed. It happened to be Ed Warren, her future husband. When she saw him, she thought to herself, "Gee, what a nice looking man." She later related how spiffy he looked in his uniform with his sharply creased pants and perfectly coiffed hair. She also recalled, "And he smelled like Noxzema." Do you remember Noxzema?
Yes. Oh my God, I totally used that in high school. And it was a very strong smelling,
very astringent, sterile kind mm-hmm. of minty, mentholatum-y kind of smell.
Yeah.
I don't see a lot of Noxzema in the drugstore these days, but he also worked as a lifeguard during the day and his shift would apply a bunch of Noxzema cream to the skin because that would soothe the sunburn. So he smelled like Noxzema. Right. Yeah. I added that just simply because I was like, I used to use that.
So funny.
After the movie ended, Ed happily offered to walk Lorraine and her two friends home. As they walked, he told the girls he would buy them all a Coke. When they got to the soda fountain, the two other girls ordered their Cokes. And at the time, the sodas were 5 cents each. When it came time for Lorraine to order her soda, she said, "I'll have an ice cream soda." That drink cost 10 cents, which I was like, okay. In later years, Ed often joked, "Lorraine ordered an ice cream soda for 10 cents. I always knew she was a gold digger." Which I thought was really quite adorable. After the three girls had their drinks, they all continued on their way to their respective homes. But Lorraine actually became worried because her house was the last on the route And it would not be appropriate for Ed to walk her all the way to her house. After all, she had left the house alone. Again, this is the 40, late 40s.
Right, yeah.
You know what I mean? I thought, I ain't leaving my house alone in the dark ever at all. So she told Ed that she would continue on to her destination alone. He nodded his understanding and asked her for a date. She accepted, and then he happily ran across the street to return to his own home. So she recalled in later years, when he ran across the street, I didn't see the slender man, young man of 16. I psychically saw Ed as a grown man, a man that I would marry. In fact, when I returned home that evening, I wrote in my diary, today I met the man that I'm going to marry. Wow. Which I thought was, yeah. So they were both 16 at the time when they met, and he entered the Navy on his 17th birthday. A few months later, the ship... So he entered the Navy during World War II. So a few months later, the ship that he was on collided with an oil tanker in the North Atlantic. It became known as one of the worst shipping disasters of the war. A fire erupted, the ship exploded, all of the men on ship had to jump overboard. As Ed was in the icy water, he prayed for help from the Blessed Mother and was soon rescued when inexplicably the flames parted in the water and a Coast Guard boat was sailing up and picked him up, him and the man he was rescuing up. After that experience, he returned home and asked Lorraine to marry him. So after Ed's ship was sunk, he returned stateside. Yeah, sure. That's a word, right? Stide. Mm-hmm. Sure. On a 30 day.
Something in his eye. He was
fine. It was fine. On a 30-day survivor's leave. That's all they gave survivors after their ship was blown out of the water? Wow.
Right. 30 days to think about it.
Sure, right. Reflect. Mm-hmm. Change your life. Find God. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So while home, Ed and Lorraine wed and became Mr. and Mrs. Ed and Lorraine Warren. The two were married in 1945. They had one child, Judy, who is married to, like I mentioned earlier, Tony Sparrow. So Ed, once he was done with the military, he had a talent for painting, and he enrolled in Yale's art subsidiary, the Perry Art School. His paintings depicted mostly haunted houses throughout Connecticut and other ghostly works. They're actually quite impressive. Yeah, they're actually quite impressive. So we will certainly include some of his paintings in the post on Patreon. But he withdrew from the school after 2 years. Laura is trying to manage her cat.
She thinks she's part of the story. And as we discussed, she's in the way. So she can't fucking jump. So here's what happens. She thinks she can jump onto my lap. She makes it most of the way and then uses her nails to make it the last bit.
Yeah. My God.
Not like in a hurtful way, just try, because she's too.
Help my fat ass get up here.
You know what it is when you're pregnant? You can't even stand up. And I couldn't tie my shoes. I get it.
Yeah.
But not awesome. And then she hopped on my lap now. And I was like, no, you have to go. That's when you started laughing. I was like, I made a face. I was like, oh, she got me.
Yeah.
I was like, no, you have to go.
So is she comfy on your bed?
Yeah. She found there's like a shirt, like a sweatshirt I had, hoodie I had on like earlier, like on the bed. So she's like, I'm going to lay on that. It's black. I love it.
Good. Why are you wearing hoodies? It's 112 there.
Well, in my house, it's like 72, and sometimes it's cozy. I am the problem with the global warming, just to say, sorry.
Oh, my God. Okay. Wow. All right, so back to people with bigger problems.
Sorry, yes, go on.
Ed withdrew from art school after 2 years, and the couple set up pop-up stands throughout tourist areas of Massachusetts, Vermont, Rhode Island, and coastal Connecticut to sell his paintings. But in 1952, Ed's interest in the paranormal went beyond his paintings and drawings. So this is around the time where they founded NESPR, which is the New England Society for Psychic Research. So when he would hear about any report of a structure being haunted, he and Lorraine, who actually, ironically, was a skeptic at the time, they would travel to the site to investigate. And he would stand out in the street and he would sketch the house and then paint it and then give the painting to Lorraine. And then she would approach the homeowners with the painting as a friendly gesture to say, oh, my husband loves your house. He thinks it's really beautiful. And he noticed that it was haunted. Here's the painting he did for you guys, as kind of a gesture to get invited into the home, which in this day and age, would they'd be like, bitch, no. If they open the door.
Listen, creepo.
But back then, it works. So the pair became stars in the paranormal believing community. Eventually, they would go on to give lectures at high schools and colleges. The money was good. They founded this New England Society for Psychic Research, which their son-in-law now runs. People started like hearing about them, and they started calling them to talk about the odd occurrences in their own homes. So some of the more famous cases, and I'm sure that you have heard about most, if not all of these, the majority of people who actually contacted them for help were families. They were the only ones at the time who were investigating such things. So by the 1970s, Ed and Lorraine Warren became known as the, quote, seekers of the supernatural throughout New England. So a lot of their cases were, you know, simple cases of ghosts, people that needed to cross over, things like that. Some of them were a little bit more serious. They were demonic entities. They were demonic possessions and things that needed to be exorcised. So in order to exorcise demons in cases that they came across, they had to get permission from the Catholic Church. So during their investigations, they made sure to take great care in recording and documenting the occurrences, the claims, interviews, the possession. So this is like audio recording, video recording. But even presenting all of that evidence to the Catholic Church was an uphill battle. They always helped people that were in desperate need, and they never, ever took money for doing it. So some of their more famous cases, Annabelle the Doll. I think we have all heard about Annabelle the Doll. We certainly covered that particular haunted object in episode 5 of this podcast. As a recap, in 1968, a student nurse is given a Raggedy Ann doll as a gift, and she brings it home where she lives with a roommate. Almost immediately, the roommates noticed strange occurrences with the doll, and they were introduced to a medium who told them the doll was inhabited by the spirit of a child named Annabelle. Kick this medium the fuck out. If a medium tells you that something is haunted by a child, get rid of the medium and the object.
Throw everything off a bridge. Throw it all. Just throw all
everything off the bridge, including the medium and the doll.
Right? Does everybody toss everything?
Yourself. Jump off. Everybody go.
Right? Go. You'll be happier. It'll work out better that way.
Yeah, 1,000%. The two roommates tried to accept the doll's spirit and please it, only to have it reciprocate maliciousness and violent intent. This is when they contacted Ed and Lorraine Warren, and when they came in and did their investigation, they pronounced the doll as demonically possessed. It's very common for a demon to try to gain the trust of a human by
pretending to be a child.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Pretending to be a child. Yeah. And what is the most that's such an evil thing to do, because what person is going to turn away a child? What person is going to not want to help especially this ghost of a dead child? You know what I mean? So that's just,
yeah, it's going to tug at your heartstrings.
That's why they do it. So Ed and Lorraine Warren removed the doll from the house and encased it in a glass box in their home to contain the evil spirited entity. Again, if you want to hear more about Annabelle, we covered it in episode 5. Next up, the Perrin family. So Annabelle, good old Annabelle happened in 1968. The Perrin family happened in 1971. Situated in Harrisville, Rhode Island, the home owned by the Perrin family was said to be haunted by a witch, which we also covered the Harrisville farmhouse in episode... We covered it, I promise. The episode is titled The Harrisville Farmhouse. So the home was owned by the Perrin family and was said to be haunted by a witch from the 19th century by the name of Bathsheba Sherman. Based on the Warrens' research, the witch cursed this particular piece of land so that any inhabitants would eventually suffer a painful, untimely death. This is the case that actually inspired the 2013 film, The Conjuring, which Lorraine Warren was a consultant on. Ed had actually once stated, when I go into a home, I'm not looking for devils. I'm not looking for ghosts. I'm looking for a natural explanation of what is going on. So if you're a huge fan of The Conjuring universe and you're a huge fan of Ed and Lorraine Warren, like, I mean, I don't know about you, Laura, but when I see a movie that I really think is fascinating, I want to look up everything about it. Is it based on a true story? Let me know the director. How is it written? Like, I'm just, IMDb is one of my favorite sites.
I use it all the time.
All the time. So it's kind of become known since 2013 that the parents had a falling out with the Warrens. And here's what happened. What soured the relationship with the Warrens and the parents was that while they were investigating this house, because the parents did reach out to the Warrens for help. But what happened was that together, they decided to hold a seance in the hopes of finding a name or a motive for why the haunting is happening.
Well, never a good idea, but go on.
Never a good idea. Right. But
no, don't do it.
The mother, Carolyn Perrin, who... In our episode, Archie and I are like, this is like the most dedicated wife of all motherfucking wives. Because this Bathsheba Sherman seemed to be really fixated on her husband, Roger. And she wasn't having it. Carolyn was like, bitch, this is mine. Where I was like, bitch, you can have him. But that's why she was married forever. And I have never been. I will let a ghost take you. If you marry me,
right.
I will not fight a ghost for you. So Carolyn Perrin was very...
Sorry, next.
Next. Thank you, next. Let's play Ariana Grande right now.
Right, yeah, exactly. She knew what was up.
She knew what was up. So Carolyn Perrin was all for the seance. Roger... Not so much, but his wife wanted to do it, so he went along with it. Mm-hmm. During the seance, some unseen force picked up the mother from her chair and threw her to the ground and shoved her into a wall. So, naturally, everybody's freaked out. All of a sudden, Carolyn, she starts speaking in strange tongues. So to the Warrens, she has clearly been possessed by whatever is in the house. And her husband, Roger, is obviously terrified. And he runs to her to help her. But Ed stops him. Because he knows that if Roger interferes, he too could be in serious danger. So he wasn't stopping him to be like, no, let this bitch just fucking go to hell. He was stopping him because he was like, you're about to get really fucked up too. However, angry, Roger punched Ed Warren in the face and, he kicked Ed and Lorraine out of the house and they were never allowed to return.
Wow.
So that's kind of like where the truth and fiction kind of get blurred where, you know, like I haven't seen the movie The Conjuring in a really long time. It's a fabulous movie. It's the very first one. It was done so well. And, but then of course, once it comes out, then people start to research the real story. So then they find out that the parents kicked Ed and Lorraine out. And then there's this whole, kind of conspiracy theory about how they're frauds, they're charlatans, they're making shit up, they're blah, blah, blah. I have been very, very fortunate through my connection with Entity Voices and just the podcast and the friends that we have made, I've been very, very fortunate to watch interviews with Andrea Perrin, who is the oldest daughter, one of the oldest daughters in the Perrin family. And she and I are actually friends on Facebook now. I watch her show, which my friend Tony Rathman is a producer of her web show every week. Yeah. So I've been very, very fortunate to kind of hear the truth. She's written a number of books about this house, the Harrisville farmhouse, where she talks about what it was actually really like to live there after this whole chaos with the Warrens and the initial, you know, shit going on. That family actually lived in that farmhouse for another 10 years. Some articles that you read will say that they couldn't afford to leave. They were just renting it. But they would say they couldn't afford to leave or what have you. To hear Andrea tell it, they kind of just sort of made their peace with the hauntings that were going on. They really loved living there. It was peaceful. It was tranquil. Mm-hmm. It was beautiful. It was, you know, that when the kids grew up and they moved out and the family decided to leave the farmhouse, some of the spirits actually followed them when they moved to, I think, Florida, somewhere here in the South, Florida, Georgia, maybe. Some of the spirits in the house followed them. I can't remember if they stayed with them or if they just kind of like went to see them off and make sure they were okay. But, and it was a welcome sight from the Perrin family. It was just one of those things after living there for 10 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Obviously Hollywood's going to sensationalize the horror and the scare.
More. Right. Yeah, of course.
Otherwise it wouldn't be this like horror.
It'd be a good story.
Right.
It would just be like, hey, we're friends. That's cool. Bye.
Nobody thinks. Yeah. No, that's not fun. In the end, everybody's singing Small World together. No, that's right.
Nobody
fun.
Wants to be friends.
Nobody wants to hear that. Yeah. So I thought that was really fascinating. I think if you guys, I tried to share her links, her shows on every Wednesday on Facebook and YouTube. And I tried to share them to the podcast page. I think you should watch it. She's a very, very spiritual woman. She's a very lovely woman. And I think that's pretty tremendous considering what she grew up in. So I find her a huge inspiration. But that is the actual true story of what happened with the Warrens and her family. I see both sides. You know what I mean? I see both sides.
I think they're helping, but it didn't work out.
Right, exactly.
Good intentions on both sides just didn't come together.
Exactly, yeah. So in 1974, the Warrens' family friend and psychic, Mary Pascarella, contacted them and informed them of the paranormal activity located in Bridgeport with residents Jerry and Laura Gooden and what they were experiencing. This would become known as the Lindley Street Poltergeist. This was the very first case where Ed and Lorraine Warren were kind of thrust into the media. Once news got out about the poltergeist affecting the house on Lindley Street, crowds actually started to form outside the house. This was the very first case, like I said, where they experienced a huge media presence while they tried to conduct their work. What was interesting about this one that I thought was police that had been called to the house, because obviously Ed and Lorraine Warren were the very first fucking call they made. This Mary Pascarella, this wasn't the first bitch they called. She was going in their house. They called fucking the police.
Right.
The police get there. You think something's
happening.
Right. The police get there and they're like, they see their young daughter being tossed around in a recliner, the TV falling off of its stand of its own accord. Now, again, 1974 is this fucking big box TVs. It's not like the flat. Huge, heavy fucking TVs. No one's touching it. And it's just pushed off its TV stand. Pictures flying off of the walls. The refrigerator is moving. It's moving like sliding across the floor in the kitchen. Remember the recliners from the 70s? They were like big and heavy. Like you almost had just to like your entire body just to fucking recline it.
Right. And her TV was like a piece of furniture. Like it was, at least ours was like encased in wood. Like, you know, like, it was its own thing. You didn't need an entertainment center because your fucking TV was encased. Like it was a piece of furniture.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So all of this heavy fucking furniture in 1974 is just kind of slip sliding all over the goddamn place. So the police, not knowing what the fuck to do, they call the fire department. Fire department gets there and they see the same stuff. And they're like, we can't help this.
We don't have a hose for this. That doesn't.
We don't have a hose. I don't think the force of our hose is going to push this refrigerator back, this 450-pound refrigerator back into its little corner. So it was this huge, huge thing. Police officers, fire, firemen, the city engineers were called out because they wanted to check the house to make sure, was it a gas line? Was it electrical? Was it something? So they go in, they witness all of this shit going on in this house. Until the police were like, you need to get out of here because this is dangerous, and threw the city engineers out. They all witnessed the same things and they all gave statements to either Ed and Lorraine Warren or the press that this is what they were seeing.
That's crazy. Especially for the time, right?
Right. Yes. 1974. What? The Exorcist had just come out. The Exorcist had just come out.
And you know what a strong reaction that had in the public and how people were fucking losing their minds.
Yes. Yeah. So in the end, it was one of those situations where the chief of police ended up blaming the family's young daughter. She was 90 pounds. But he blamed the movement of a 450-pound refrigerator across the kitchen floor on her, even though everybody saw it move and she was on the other side of the kitchen. Sure. I mean, why not? It was interesting because the documentary had said that with him doing that, he not only kind of tried to, he not only damaged the credibility of the family, but his own police officers as well, who witnessed it just move across the fucking floor.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like Zane's 85 pounds. And yes, he's quite strong, but he's a movement in a refrigerator.
Mm-mm. Yeah, no, it's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So that was one of their first like thrusts where media into like a media spotlight. Right. The next one, however, would just be a few months later with the story of the Amityville Horror.
Right.
Yes. So we covered this in episode 58. As a recap, in 1974, in the small Long Island town of Amityville, 23-year-old Ronald DeFeo Jr., who I just learned died in March of this year. So shocked. I didn't know that. He brutally shot his parents and four siblings while they slept in their beds. Just 1 year later, George and Kathleen Lutz purchased and moved into the home for the bargain price of just $80,000, which I just bought my very first home, and I would have... That is a bargain price, even in 74, which is probably fairly expensive.
It was.
Yeah. Oddly, the house with the $80,000 also included much of the DeFeo's furniture, including the beds that the family was shot in. Why would you? The Lutz family only stayed in the home for 28 days before being terrorized out of their home by a demonic presence. You can watch this reenacted by the beautiful Ryan Reynolds. I think I went on about him a bazillion hours in the actual episode we did on this. But
this, I might have heard this before. I mean, just slightly.
That boy. If he wants to shoot me, he can, because he's beautiful. I'm kidding. Maybe.
Kind of.
He's got my sense of humor. Like, I love how him and Blake Lively oh my god, rip on each other all the time. They are literally like, I love to watch their Instagrams.
He is hilarious.
He's super hilarious. his tweets about being a parent are like,
and fucking spot on and hilarious. And she's wicked smart too, and or witty, yeah. And you know
they're so like perfect.
That, so they're great.
1,000%. Yeah. I see him much more with her than Scarlett Johansson. Mm-hmm. Go. Anyway. So in May of 1975, 5 months after the Lutz family left the home, Ed and Lorraine investigated the home along with a news crew to document the findings. During the investigation, an infrared time-lapse camera picked up an image of a demonic boy standing at the bottom of a staircase. Do you remember this? I showed you and Archie this picture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's creeps.
It's super creeps. The Warrens concluded that the house was inhabited by an evil supernatural entity due to its violent history. However, it's worth noting that she didn't pick up the spirits of the DeFeo family in it.
Mm-hmm.
Which, of anybody, you would think would be haunting the fuck out of that
place. Right.
Right. So, Ed, Lorraine and Ed actually stood by their experiences in that house with that seance in those investigations until the day that they died. So that's kind of, I think that's kind of saying something. But that's just me. Like, I would still, like, profess my honesty and, you know, until, if it actually happened to me, I'm going to fucking shout it from the rooftops until I die.
Right. You're never going to change your story. It's going
to
be.
And they never did. It was always the same fucking story. The flip side of that is, of course, you're going to, because your reputation's on the line. You're going to memorize it. You're going to, you know.
Well, and in their case, they were giving it so often. It probably was the same kind of canned thing. At some point, you have to just do that, you know.
Right. Yeah, for sure. So, some aspects of Ed and Lorraine's account of this case was actually portrayed in the opening scenes of the 2016 film, The Conjuring 2. Though not featured in the book by Jay Anson or in the movie, The Amityville Horror, they're instantly made famous by both, which I thought was really interesting. Yeah. So after this, they gained popularity in the mainstream media, and they even appeared on popular television shows such as The Merv Griffin Show, The Tom Snyder Show, A Haunting, and Scariest Places on Earth, which is one of my very favorite shows. I watch it every year at Halloween. So as their notoriety grew, the Warrens expanded their audiences through media appearances, speaking engagements, and college lecture tours, all to try to prove that the devil was real. The Warrens continued to make television appearances throughout their career, and Lorraine actually had a cameo in The Conjuring. Did you know that? I don't remember.
I don't know.
I'm like, I need to go back and watch that. They became in high demand for interviews, speaking engagements. Why can't I say that fucking word?
I don't know.
Speaking engagements and more college lecture tours. They truly wanted to warn and educate people. Once you open a door up, it's exceptionally difficult to close it. Also, it's worth noting that they did not just take anyone's word when they said they were experiencing paranormal activity. Ed would actually go to the scene and use every avenue available to him to rule out all logical explanations before moving forward with the case. In an attempt to quiet critics about herself, Lorraine Warren underwent testing by parapsychologists at UCLA test led by Dr. Thelma Moss. After going through a barrage of tests, they determined she was what is called a light trance medium. So there are two different kinds of trance mediums, a light trance medium and a deep trance medium. A deep trance medium will have the spirit guide or spirit talk through them and kind of tell them like the history or the situation that had happened in the house. Let's say, for example, this is not what happened in Amityville, but let's just say, oh yeah, you know, the spirit did overwhelm Ronald DeFeo and whatever. Mm. So the guide will talk through the deep trance medium to explain what happened during a particular event. At the end of that, when it's done, the medium isn't going to, when they wake up and they come out of the trance, they're not going to remember what they said, what they did, what they heard, or what they saw.
Okay.
alike.
It's almost like a trance.
Kind of. Exactly. In right. a very yeah. deep trance. Okay. They're just kind right. of taken over by their spirit guide. Right. And then that's just it.
And then that goes out. Okay.
Right. Kind of like automatic writing. Lorraine is a light trance medium where she was always very aware of what was happening to her, very aware of what she was seeing, very aware that she had been, you know, witnessing events in the past, and very aware that she was leaving her body. So she was in a trance, but it was a light trance. So she was still kind of connected, if you want to kind of picture maybe an umbilical cord to your soul in these events. She was she was still kind of connected. That's a light trance medium, which is what she was found to be.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So in 1981, one of their most controversial cases was the murder case of Arnie Johnson, who stabbed to death his landlord, Alan Bono, in the Devil Made Me Do It case. And that's what the Conjuring 3 movie is about. So, I'm not spoiling anything for you, Laura, because I mean, it's
out there.
It's out there.
It's like watching the Titanic. We know what's going to happen. Go on.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. The boat sinks slowly and everyone is saved.
Of course.
Leo doesn't die.
Get on the door.
Yeah. Leo doesn't die on the door frame. Yeah. That doesn't happen. So essentially, Arnie Johnson was the boyfriend of Debbie Glassell, and she had an 11-year-old brother who through experiences and things going on in the movie, which I'm not going to get into, became possessed by a demon. Arnie Johnson was present during the exorcism of this little boy. He was planning on marrying Debbie. So he was very kind of, it wasn't just like some random fucking boyfriend.
Right. He was committed.
He was committed. Yes. Eventually he actually was later, but yes, he was committed to the relationship. And he was there for a number of the exorcisms on this 11-year-old child. In an attempt to save the child, because again, he was 18, this kid was 11, he really loved him, he was a little brother. He challenged the demon inside the child, take me instead. And so it did. What ended up happening was after several weeks, it wasn't just like, okay, I'm going to jump out of this kid and into you, and then I'm going to take you to your house and you're going to kill your landlord. It was a kind of a manifestation over a number of weeks and days. He did stab his landlord to death, Alan Bono. He was arrested. And Ed and Lorraine Warren were there for the exorcisms of David Glassell. So the family turned to them and they were like, if this isn't his fault, he was possessed. The demon that left the child went into him. It was a whole thing. So basically, there was stuff was happening. So basically, they went and they found a defense attorney. And they were able to prove to the defense attorney what had happened to Arnie Johnson to such a degree that this defense attorney put his own reputation on the line to submit a plea of not guilty by reason of demonic possession for the actual plea in a murder case. So it was really phenomenal. There's also a new documentary out called The Devil Made Me Do It. That they released kind of in tandem with The Conjuring 3, where they actually interview Debbie Glassell and Arnie Johnson and the people involved, the attorney, everybody. And I'm halfway through it, so I'm excited. I'm probably going to watch it when we're done here. But long story short, it didn't work, and the judge shut that fucking defense line down hard. And Arnie Johnson was sentenced to 5 years in prison for manslaughter, which I kind of have to agree with, because think about how many psychos would be like, I was possessed by the devil. This guy got off. Why can't I? And then Ted Bundy's wandering the fucking roads. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it. Yeah. So another one of their most famous cases, which we are going to be covering in the podcast, is the Smurl family. The Warrens encountered a succubus during the paranormal investigation of Jack and Janet Smurl in 1986. Do you know what a succubus is?
Uh-huh.
Yeah?
I've dated a few.
Yeah. So have I. It's not.
It's not cool.
It's not great.
That's not cool.
Yeah. So a succubus is a specific name given to a demon that primarily attacks males. When the Warrens' efforts to remove the succubus from the Spurls' house failed, this is what I found fucking amazing. When the Warrens' efforts to remove the succubus from the Spurls' house failed, they reached out to the Catholic Church and they were like, look, here's our video evidence. Here's our audio evidence. This is happening to this family. Look at the scratches. Look at the cuts. Look at this. Look at that. The Catholic Church wanted no part of them or it. No part. Mm-hmm. They were like, no. So this actually pissed Ed Warren off. And he decided to use his fame that he now had to force the hand of the Catholic Church by holding a press conference detailing to the world what this family was going through and what the Catholic Church said. Basically like, oh, fucking well. That got the attention of the Vatican. I was like, what? So after this big battle with the Catholic Church, the Vatican finally gives in and sends Cardinal Ratzinger to do an exorcism of the house. Now, we may know Cardinal Ratzinger today as Pope Benedict XVI, who, who was voted in. Do you vote? I guess you vote.
It's a vote. Yes. No, there's a vote.
Mm-hmm. Who succeeded Pope John Paul II.
Exactly.
This is the Pope that also decided that he couldn't continue in the
position. He abdicated. Like, so abnormal.
Right? It was like the second Pope that had ever done that in the history of popes. Yes,
there's not a lot. Usually they die in the position, of course, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's for life.
But anyway, yes, we know him as Pope Benedict XVI. After his cleansing, the house never had troubles again, and neither did the family.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hey, go on with his bad self.
Go on with his bad self. Like, he kind of maybe earned that vote. That white smoke, that was all for you. So the other thing I found really interesting was that Ed and Lorraine were both very devout Roman Catholics. So even though they were going up against the Catholic Church again and again and again and again, they never...
It's because they believed in it, though.
Yes.
They were men that they weren't helping because they believed that they could.
Yeah. They never lost their faith. And I feel like a lot of people, I feel like that might be easy for a lot of people to do, especially when the Catholic Church isn't kind of practicing what they preach.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
I think they saw it as a political battle as opposed to like a... A battle
for
of faith.
Centuries. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ed was eventually recognized as the only Catholic lay expert on demonology, which is essentially somebody who is not a Catholic priest, but an expert on demonology. I thought that was kind of, you know.
That's interesting.
Here's a cookie. Okay, you might be onto something. Here's a cookie.
Good job, little pat on the head.
Yeah. You're not going to get one of the pretty purple satin stoles. You don't get a cool hat, but here's a cookie that tastes better than a communion wafer.
Not hard to do.
Their devout faith included an inherent belief in the supernatural and a world beyond. The Warrens worked closely from then on with the Catholic Church during multiple exorcisms, and their faith played an important part in their investigations. Due to the massive increase in calls for help from the Warrens, they decided to train a team of investigators. And this wasn't any kind of like, hey, let's go on a couple of investigations and then here you go out on your own. They interviewed a lot of these people that went through this school. Once the students got a solid handle on the job, sometimes between 4 to 6 months after, like training, constantly training for 4 to 6 months, then they would be sent out to locations on their own. Because I think that's really great too, because they have a reputation. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like they can't just be sending out any Tom, Dick, and Harry that's like, I believe in ghosts. And mm-hmm. yeah, my business card says Goat Hunter, but that's only because the printing company spelled ghost wrong and I couldn't afford to have their cards reprinted, kind of a thing. Yeah. In addition to their books, their media appearances, they also starred in their own TV program called Seekers of the Supernatural, which is obviously what they were called in New England. It was hosted mm-hmm. by their son-in-law, Tony Spira. They also opened what is now their famous occult museum to the public that included on display Annabelle. Their daughter, Judy, said that her mother told her to never look Annabelle in the eyes. She said that she's only been in there a few times in her entire life, and she is almost 71 years old. And she never looks anywhere near Annabelle when she does go in there. She says it is a very horrible place, very dark, very oppressing, and a very heavy, scary energy in the room.
Wow.
In 2001, Ed and Lorraine went to Nagoya, Japan, at the behest of Japan to assist in the investigation of a haunted bridge, which I thought was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Ed had actually served in Nagoya shortly after the war, and he had received the news while he was there that their daughter Judy was born. He took Lorraine to the same spot in 2001 that he had stood on when he got the news. He told Lorraine that he felt like his life had come full circle.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool. Shortly afterward, Ed suffered a debilitating stroke that left him in a coma for 11 weeks. He never regained who he had been. Lorraine took care of her husband, taking on the duties of a wife and a nurse, changing his linens, moving him so he didn't get bed sores, changing his catheter. For 5 years, he was debilitated. Wow. Ed Warren passed away on August 23rd, 2006. News of his death hit his family and the paranormal community very hard. Jason Haas from Ghost Hunters on the Sci-Fi Channel said the world had lost an incredible person. After his passing, Tony Spira and his mother-in-law, Lorraine, continued Ed's legacy. And over the years, they continued to train people and educate people on demons. And he became an investigator and a demonologist. And, you know, it was really quite amazing, the role that this man took on, marrying into the family, really.
Right.
Yeah. When one day they get a call from Warner Brothers stating that they want to buy the rights to the Perrin family and Warren family case in what would become the first installment of the Conjuring franchise. The movie is released mm-hmm. in 2013 and grosses over $300 million. Just that's that movie.
Crazy. Mm-hmm. I horror never movie. Realized how successful they were.
Yeah. Oh my God, they're amazing.
I knew they were popular, but I mean, again, like we were talking earlier, like you think Halloween, you know.
Oh my God, funny, yeah. You think, these classics, you know. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this took over all of it. So the movie and its sequels and spinoffs introduce Ed and Lorraine Warren to a new generation. On April 18th, 2019, at the age of 92, Lorraine Warren passes away. Her death left much of the paranormal community in shock and grief. It was the end of an era, and there were some of the original pioneers in this field and meant so much to so many, according again to Jason Haas of Taps and Ghost Hunters. Tony Spira said that he never had seen a greater love between two people. They did everything together and were never apart. Their daughter, Judy, said one of the undertakers told her they have security cameras throughout the funeral home. And there were orbs floating around her mother's coffin all night long, which I thought was absolutely amazing. Laura DiDio, who was a reporter who had actually contacted the Warrens for the Amityville horror case,
mm-hmm.
She said, quote, they were a very regular couple, very religious, and that was no act. Today, Tony Spira keeps their legacy alive through investigations and a YouTube channel dedicated to them. He says, quote, "The legacy of Ed and Lorraine Warren is always do right, always try to help others, to prove that the devil is real, not just a mythic figure, and that God is our protector. It's love and love for mankind." Jeff Bellinger, who is a paranormal investigator, said, quote, "The Warrens blazed a trail that is still being traveled today by so many different paranormal investigative groups and TV shows, saying, I believe in ghosts. I believe we can document them. And I believe that they exist. And I want to tell others about them. They were doing it first. Now it's out in the open. And it's out in the open because of people like Ed and Lorraine Warren."
Aww.
So in closing, I would like to say that I am proud to say that I am able to do what I do now because of people like Ed and Lorraine Warren. And that is the controversial story of the Warrens.
Nice. Very good. Very, very good.
It's a good story. It's very interesting.
There's a lot of stuff in there that I didn't know about their background and stuff. That's really sweet.
Yeah, for sure. It is very sweet. I love that it's a love story. And in my research, I actually read a review of the original Conjuring movie that said that movie is actually, it's not a horror story, it's a love story. And it is. And when you listen to the episode that Archie and I did of the Harrisville farmhouse, it is a love story. It is about this man and this woman and their family and their hope for just like a normal, peaceful life. Kind of like when I bought this house.
Right.
And the lengths that a couple will go to kind of try to protect their marriage and their children and the life that they have. I don't know. I thought it was really fascinating. I really wanted to do Ed and Lorraine Warren as a conspiracy theory because like with all of this in the paranormal, like the podcast and me being a paranormal investigator and them, she's a clairvoyant and he's a demonologist. And there's just so much out there that is so eager to prove all of this as bullshit that it just kind of makes you want to fight harder to prove that maybe you're fucking wrong. Maybe we're not. Maybe you need to open your mind a little teeny bit and let us show you through scientific methods how you might be a little bit wrong. People are so fucking scared or angry if they're proven wrong.
Or just if their beliefs are challenged a lot, you know, people.
Yes.
And this is so, because once you prove a ghost is real, like you said, so then demons are real or God is real, or there's a lot of stuff that goes into that, right? The afterlife is real. There's a lot of stuff that gets tied into that, right? Like it's just not one thing. Cause then it kind of spills into every belief that everyone has about.
Right. And like how they conduct their lives and the decisions that they make and things like that.
It's so existential, right? Like it just
turns into a
whole other thing.
Yeah.
And I think this was a good conspiracy theory because there's so much about these people out there that is positive and negative. I mean, there's just a lot
1,000%.
Stuff that swirls around every single thing that they did.
Right. Yes.
Good or bad.
You're not going to get it right every single time. Yeah.
Right.
For sure.
For whatever they did, what, you know, good, bad, ugly, awesome, helpful, not helpful, you know.
Yeah.
But they were blazing the trail, like you said. So, I mean, of course, there was no one to teach them or show them, you know, they were learning, they were. Yeah.
Right. There was nobody to teach them like how to handle people that thought you were a fucking Fruit Loop.
Right.
Which I have met so many people that are clairvoyants, that can see spirits, that have the same gifts that Lorraine has had, and actually say to my face, "You're fucking crazy, Carrie." Oh, that's your problem you're projecting on me. Okay, it's easier for me to be crazy than you to have a gift. So it's really kind of, I agree with Jason Hawes and Jeff Bellinger and these priests and some of these people that were interviewed in this documentary, because I agree with them. Like, it's just the idea. And like you said, I agree with you. It's scary to think God is real. The devil is real. And this is like it. I think that's why us bringing you on the show has been so successful, because you're a skeptic. And while they love to hear a ghost story, they're mm-hmm. also like, it's a nice story. They're skeptics too. So I think you're just kind of asking the same questions that they're asking. And I love that. That's one of the reasons we brought you on the show. One, to challenge me, right, because I'm a paranormal investigator. So it's my job to be like, okay, that's a valid question, but what if this was the answer? And how about this is a picture for the answer? Like, skeptics are right, open-minded. Whereas a non-believer, you're never going to change a non-believer unless some life, like,
unless something happens to them.
Unless something happens to them. And even then they're going to try to rationalize mm-hmm. the fuck out yeah. of it. Yeah.
But I think
a lot of
every paranormal investigator is a skeptic. But every paranormal investigator is, right, you're trying to disprove every single other rational explanation of what can happen. And I think when we tell the stories, I mean, like you said, you thought that, I think that, you know, the people right. that are listening think those things, like, well, what could it be this? Why can't it be this? You know? Right, so we talk exactly. about it. Like, could it happen? It could be. Could this be bullshit? Sure, of course. Like, you know, that's why we yeah. talk about it. Because you want to think about, not saying it can't be real or people didn't have those experiences.
Right.
Just like, okay, well, what about that? You know, we have to look at it from all the different angles.
Right, exactly.
To be even truly open-minded, even if you believe in it wholeheartedly, 100%, and you believe this is real, okay, but we still have to look at the whole 360 picture.
Exactly. Exactly.
To really make it valid.
Which is why I love that you're coming along with us to some of these investigations, like the old hospital on College Hill. I know we're going to catch stuff. I believe in all of that. I know we're going to catch stuff. Mm-hmm. But you're going to keep us grounded. You're going to keep us critical. You know what I mean? You're going to keep mm-hmm. us thinking critically. But at the same time, you might actually be finding something that you wanted to find. Maybe once you find it, you're going to be like, I didn't want that. I lied. I was kidding. I didn't want that. That's not what I wanted. But
part of the reason I'm so excited too, is because I like so many other people want to have an experience, you know, yeah. I haven't had something that made me go, yes, you know, like 100%. Like, I'm looking for that too. Like, I want, like, I'm challenging everything to see if I can find that. Right. You know what I mean? Like, I just want so to have brave. Those experiences.
Do you get that? Do you get how brave that is, that you're challenging the beliefs you've known and grown up with? There's so many people that can't and don't want to and don't think they need to do that. That's so brave of you.
I'm okay with being proven wrong. That's okay.
Like, well, shit, I've argued that, with I don't you. Know the That's answers, not true.
Right? I am stubborn as fuck. But I also know that I don't know the answers. Like, I don't know. I'm skeptical of what people say when they present it a certain way or whatever, you know, just like anybody else should be. I'm going to use, you know, rational thought and, you know, all of these things to be like, okay, well, you know, this might be this or this might be that. And I'm going to look at it through a bunch of different lenses. Like, it could be this, but it could be this, you know, but then going into these places, like, I want something to challenge my belief system. I want that, you know,
I think that's amazing. And I think it's rare.
To grow, you have to be like that, though.
I agree.
Open to experiences, and you have to, you know, you believe in it wholeheartedly, and you're going to look at some stuff and be like, bullshit. Like, I believe in ghosts, but I don't fucking believe that shit. You know what I mean? But everybody has to be like that. You have to be open and, you know, skeptical and use critical thought and use your brain, really, just to, like, think things through and also challenge yourself.
I'm excited.
It's so important. I'm excited too.
I think it is so important, because I think we're all going to learn something there that we didn't know either about the field or ourselves mm-hmm. or each other. I know that you and I have a plan. If it's storming and there are bugs storming the hospital, we're going to leave Chris and Audra in the building. We're going to lock ourselves in the car. We're going to go hide in the car. And then we're going to be like, yeah, we have plans because we can't handle bugs. I can handle a ghost or a demon or whatever the fuck, something crawling, spiritually crawling.
It's crawling on the ceiling. It's fine.
If it's a crab walking on the ceiling, it's fine.
Good.
But yeah, we do
not up my leg. No.
No, we do have an out plan.
So we have contingency plans.
We do. It needs to happen. So Chris and Audra, I know, are probably listening to this. Sorry, it is what it is.
We're going to do our very best.
We're going to try real hard. Everybody monitor the weather. That's basically all I can say is let's just kind of keep an eye on the weather. At any rate, that was the story of Ed and Lorraine Warren. I like, Laura, that you and I went off on a kind of a tiny tangent.
Big tangent. Well, you know, it's not the first time. It's certainly not going to be the last. It's kind of our jam.
Fortunately, we have a 6-hour drive from my house to Old Hospital College. And we have a lot of time to rant about shit.
We'll probably be all talked out by the time we get there. We're like, let's just find some ghost fog.
Right. I can't
so be somebody else to talk to.
Locked in a car with this bitch for 6 hours.
Right. Please find somebody else to talk to.
She is just endlessly talking about her laser.
Right. What is this Mothman?
Anyway, we hope you enjoyed this, guys. Archie is back next month with his conspiracy theory, and I hope it's good. I asked Jennifer if she thought it was good, and she was like,
it's fine.
I mean, she's really like a super impartial person and perfect for the one keeping track of all this nonsense. Anyway, we love you and we will see you next month. We have major announcements coming your way. By the time you get this, or by the time Archie's actually comes out, we will be on YouTube. But we do have a major announcement coming out for our 100th episode. Super excited about that. And there's going to be a little bit of a contest, a la Friends, lightning round, if you will, for Archie and Laura. And when I told them what it was, neither was excited, but I am, because the prize is
fucking because cool. It was your goddamn idea.
Because it's my goddamn idea. And everything I dream up is pristine and perfect.
Of course it is.
Of course it is. Anyway, Laura, I love you, and I will see you in a couple of days when we record the actual episode. All right, guys, that was it. Ed and Lorraine.
Thank you so much.
Let us know what you think, and we will see you next month with Archie's conspiracy theory. I'm sure it's probably going to be alien-esque. What do you think, Laura?
Probably.
Although he did the toxic lady, which was really fucking...
Yeah, that was great. I don't know. He's been throwing out some curveballs, so...
He really has, yeah.
So, he's been kind of all over the map. I love it.
A little bit, yeah. So that's what he gets for not being here, as we talk a bunch of shit and speculate all about him and his thoughts. Anyway, Archie, we love you and we miss you, and we will see you all in another month with the next conspiracy theory. To that end, Laura, take it away. Give the warning.
I never do the beginning. Stay safe, because you don't never know who
or what
is listening.
There you go. Good girl.
I remembered.
Bye, guys.
Bye. Thank you.